Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, August 4th. We begin with a front page article on the Decatur Herald and Review about the fire yesterday. This article written by Chris Lizvardi, a staff writer for the paper. Fire causes disruption in downtown Decatur. Smoke from a fire Wednesday morning in a vacant downtown Decatur building was causing issues for neighboring businesses, but structural damage was limited. The building at 145 North Main Street was being renovated to meet the expanding needs of Renaissance Church, said Joe Alville, one of its pastors. Alville wasn't sure yet, until he was able to go inside the building, how the fire would affect the church's plans. Alville said the church wants to be part of the improvements happening in downtown Decatur, as its congregation has expanded to nearly 500 members. The church is quickly outgrowing its current space at 456 North Water Street next to the Avon Theater, he said. Adjoining businesses, including Lincoln Square Theater and Heritage Behavioral Health Center, were left figuring out what to do as smoke poured out of the building. Clients were evacuated from Heritage after staff smelled smoke and pulled the fire alarm, with the fire department getting the call shortly before 8 a.m. "We've had the fire department here before," Heritage CEO Candace Clevenger said. "We have fire drills or the alarm goes off. Usually it's one or two trucks, not blocking the whole road." Fire Chief Jeff Abbott said six fire trucks and 26 firefighters responded to the scene, making sure hot spots were put out after containing the fire. Firefighters were working both in front of the building with an aerial truck and others from the alley in the back. Decatur police blocked off a portion of North Main Street and Prairie Avenue as curious onlookers gathered outside to see what was happening, and traffic was diverted around the scene. The largest group was standing outside the Decatur Club. Abbott said the fire appeared to start above the loading dock in the back of the building, although inspectors were on site trying to determine the cause of the fire. No one was injured, Abbott said. Appointments at Heritage were being delayed, as no one was allowed to return inside the building until high carbon dioxide levels receded. The facility has space for no more than 34 residents, although Clevenger wasn't sure how many were in the building at the time. "Those who were inside the facility were being moved to other locations," she said. Lincoln Square Theater President Adam White went inside shortly after the fire was safely under control and was grateful to see no immediate structural damage to the theater. "It did smell like smoke inside," he said. White thought it was going to be worse after receiving calls about the fire and seeing all the fire trucks when he got there. "I assumed it was the historical building going up with the theater on fire," White said. White said the theater is marking its 100-year anniversary, so it didn't need anything to set back its plans. "We have some of the biggest shows coming in that we've had in the last 10 years, White said. Firefighters remained on scene for much of the morning, with the first crews leaving and portions of Prairie and North Main starting to reopen about 9:30 a.m. We have another front page article, this one written by Allison Petty. Decatur 9/11 Memorial Planned for Nelson Park. The Decatur 9/11 Memorial, featuring a steel I-beam salvaged from the Twin Towers, has likely found its future home in Nelson Park. The Decatur Park District Board of Commissioners expressed support Wednesday for a plan to place the structure near the waterfront of Lake Decatur, adjacent to the small beach area near the Beach House restaurant. "I want it to happen, whatever it takes," Board President Bob Brilley II said after the meeting. "I'm really excited about it." Volunteers behind the project described their plans to the board, which is expected to vote formally on the proposal at its next meeting. The beam first came to Decatur in October 2015. The effort to bring it to the city was led by individuals from the George A. Mueller Beer Company, and volunteers from other areas of the community have stepped up to help. The design from Chastain and Associates will feature a pentagon-shaped base with two steel towers rising 20 feet into the air. Each outline of a tower will surround a piece of steel. One 13-foot burned warped piece taken from the towers, and one that is pristine and shiny. The design also incorporates outlines of metal flames, which take the shape of doves as they rise. We remember with the old beam, we rebuild with the new beam, and we become stronger, said Lauren Axe, controller for George A. Mueller Beer Company. Visitors to the memorial would be able to reach in and touch the beam and to see a portion of filing cabinet that has melted with it. The biggest hurdle now is fundraising for the effort. About $15,000 has been raised so far, and Axe said there is some $235,000 to go. The goal for completing the project is September 11, 2017. The Community Foundation of Macon County is the fiscal agent that will collect donations for the creation and maintenance of the piece. Donations can be made by visiting the foundation's website, www.endowdecatur.org, and specifying that the money is for the Decatur 9/11 Memorial. We need to get the word out, Axe said. There's been an amazing response from the people once they hear about it. Some progress toward that goal should be made this weekend. As Axe said, the memorial would be represented in the last float of the Decatur Celebration Parade on Saturday. We turn inside the Decatur Herald and Review and pick up an article, another one written by Chris Lisvardi. This about elections. Group challenging how legislative districts are drawn. After similar redistricting measures failed in 2010 and 2014, a renewed effort is underway through the Independent Map Amendment Initiative. A diverse, nonpartisan coalition has been developed in support of the proposal, said Brad McMillan, executive director of the Institute for Principled Leadership in Public Service at Bradley University. McMillan spoke Wednesday about the issue during the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce Business Breakfast at the Decatur Club. It's as broad a coalition of support as we'll find for any issue in the state of Illinois, McMillan said. This is the one issue on which we are most unified in to believe in turning Illinois back in the right direction. Former Democratic White House Chief of Staff Bill Daley and former Republican Governor Jim Edgar are on the board, along with representatives of minority groups, business leaders, the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, and Illinois Farm Bureau. The group gathered 564,000 signatures as part of a petition in support of the ballot initiative, more than the 290,000 that were needed, McMillan said. Much of the support for the petition came from central Illinois, he noted. McMillan said the group is hoping the question can be placed on the November 8th ballot. But first, he said, the Illinois Supreme Court could decide the constitutionality of the issue being included on the ballot. A brief was filed last week in support of the measure, McMillan said. Opponents, led by the Illinois Democratic Party, chaired by House Speaker Michael Madigan of Chicago, are expected to file a brief later this week, after which supporters will file a response, followed by the possibility of the Supreme Court hearing oral arguments. Attorneys representing the opposition argue the proposal runs afoul of the rules under which citizens can amend the Constitution. A ruling is needed by August 26, at which time ballots will be certified, McMillan said. We need one of the three branches of government in Illinois to do the right thing, McMillan said. He said the hope is legislative maps will be drawn in a fair manner. Under the current system, McMillan said, political parties control the maps in their favor. Maps are drawn behind closed doors with no transparency, McMillan said. The bottom line is the system is rigged. It's rigged for political purposes. More information on this issue is available at www.mapamendment.org. And map amendment, of course, is all one word. McMillan said if maps can be redrawn, then to expect more squares and rectangles in downstate districts. He said districts in the Chicago and Metro East areas could still be oddly shaped in order to meet requirements to include minorities. Right below that article is one by Justin Kahn, who is also an H&R staff writer. St. Mary's promoting minority organ donation. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital Food Service and Nutrition employee Mary Lee was already an organ donor. "If I pass away, I want to be able to help someone, save some lives," Lee said. But what Lee didn't know was that as of May 2015, nearly 58% of the more than 123,000 patients on the waiting list for an organ were minorities. While whites have a 93% chance of finding a match, blacks only have a 66% chance. "Wow," said Lee, who is black, "I didn't know that. That's good to know." St. Mary's held a National Minority Donor Awareness Week donor drive on Tuesday. The Illinois Secretary of State's Organ Tissue Donor Program, Life Goes On, was there relaying information and signing up those who weren't already donors. Also, Central Illinois Community Blood Center was there promoting its Be the Match bone marrow donation program and area blood drives. Sister Rita Marie Brown, a health advocate at St. Mary's, said, like many, she had no idea the need for minority donors when she first got involved in the crusade for organ donation. "There wasn't a lot of focus on this until 3 years ago," Brown said, "but the need is great. We're just trying to get awareness out there." Most organs can be used across races. Although organs are not matched according to race, with kidneys, it's preferred to have donors be the same race as the recipient. "The chance of rejection is lower, and the organ is more likely to take with the same race," Life Goes On regional coordinator Liz Hager said. "With the heart, lungs, liver, pancreas, and corneas, it doesn't make a difference." The reason is human leukocyte antigens, HLA types. A black person is more likely to have an HLA type similar to another black person. Further driving need is that blacks have higher rates of the leading causes of kidney disease, hypertension, and diabetes. In addition to becoming an organ donor, Central Illinois Community Blood Center was signing up bone marrow and stem cell donors and also providing blood type checks and promoting local blood drives. Bone marrow stem cell donors must be between 18 and 44. "You just fill out the form and have your cheek swab," said Blood Center marrow recruitment specialist Amanda Howie. "Once you're on the registry, your chance of being matched is 1 in 500. You have to be a perfect match, but it's possible you could save a life." Well, and then they have a small boxed item underneath that article that says, "To help to register as an organ donor, go to lifegoeson.com. You can also register in person at your local Secretary of State facility. To register as a bone marrow stem cell donor, go to join.bethematch.org. And the upcoming blood drives in the area are the GT Church at 500 South 27th Street today from 3 to 7:30 p.m. And then tomorrow at the Bob Evans at 3020 North Water Street, the Friday, August 12th. Oops, I'm sorry, I said today, but that's August 11th. So that's next week. You have time to plan to do that. a week from today, August 11th, 3 to 7:30 p.m. at the GT Church on 27th Street, and then Bob Evans at 3020 North Water Street on Friday, August 12th. And that's from, it says 6:30 to 10:30 a.m., so for the early morning crowd, 6:30 to 10:30 a week from tomorrow. We turn now to some of the local crime news written up by Huey Freeman, the H&R staff writer in charge of crime and the courts. This article carries the headline, Narcotics Raid Nets Cocaine Valued at $31,000. Decatur street crime detectives raiding a Southside house Tuesday morning arrested a 34-year-old man in possession of about 10 ounces of cocaine with a street value of $31,000, a .25-caliber handgun, and $7,000 in cash. The narcotics detectives, along with Decatur Police Emergency Response Team and Macon County Sheriff's deputies, found Clester Woods Jr. lying down in a bedroom when they entered a house in the 1200 block of East Riverside Avenue about 7:15 a.m. Tuesday. In the bedroom, detectives found two digital scales dusted with white powdery residue, a baggie containing about 2 ounces of suspected crack cocaine, and another baggie with about 20 grams of powder cocaine, said an affidavit by Decatur Detective Jonathan Jones. A Lorson brand pistol with 5 live rounds in its magazine was found beneath the mattress of the bed where Woods was located. During a police interview, Woods said the cocaine officers found belonged to him. He pointed out that, quote, he had several baggies of cocaine in his closet on a shelf, Jones wrote in his statement. He said he had just bought about 9 ounces of cocaine a few days earlier. The cash was also found in the bedroom. In response to a police question, Wood said he had been selling drugs for the past month and a half. He was arrested on felony charges, including possession of a controlled substance, 100 to 400 grams, with intent to deliver, possession of a weapon by a felon, and armed violence, committing a felony while armed with a dangerous weapon. He's being held on $200,000 bond, pending his arraignment by Wednesday. His previous criminal convictions included felony possession of a controlled substance in 2003 and misdemeanor possession of cannabis in 2013. In another crime and courts item written by Huey Freeman, a Decatur man is charged with violating 3 girls. Paul L. Cruz, a 50-year-old Decatur man who was convicted of battery in a sex child case 11 years ago, is facing 13 new charges, including Class X predatory criminal sexual assault, for allegedly violating, molesting, or exploiting 3 children. Cruz, who is being held on $252,000 bond in the Macon County Jail, was arrested July 28th after a girl younger than 14 told police Cruz has been molesting and violating her since she was a young child. The victim said the abuse began before she was about 7 years old. She said that Cruz has abused her on more than 100 occasions during the past 5 or 6 years, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Eric Ethel. During the past several years, he fondled her and undressed her as she slept on numerous occasions, she said. The victim said Cruz recently fondled her while he was naked, as he hid behind a chair so an adult who was sleeping in the room would not see him. She told police she was afraid and embarrassed to report the abuse, Ethel wrote in his statement. Another girl, also younger than 14, told police that on several occasions she was sleeping in the same residence as Cruz when she woke up and saw him standing by her bed watching her sleep. On one occasion, she woke up on her stomach with her shirt rolled up as his hand was on her thigh and he kissed her back. A third victim, also under 14 years old, told police she was sleeping on her side in a chair when she woke up to the sight of Cruz with his pants and underwear down as he rubbed her buttocks outside her clothes. A couple of months later, she was in a bed when Cruz stood naked between her bed and another girl's bed. Cruz was arraigned in circuit court on Class X charge, punishable by 6 to 60 years in prison, plus 2 counts of criminal sexual assault, each punishable by 4 to 15 years, and 6 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, 3 to 7 years each. He is also charged with 4 misdemeanor counts, 2 each of sexual exploitation of a child and battery. He was granted a public defender after reporting that he had been laid off from his job. In his prior child sex case, Cruz pleaded guilty to 2 counts of battery, Class A misdemeanors, in exchange for a 2-year probation term and dismissal of 2 felony counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse. We're turning now to the Decatur Tribune and Paul Osborne's City Beat column, which has the starts with the headline, Mayor Moore Wolf aspires to continue efforts leading city. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf officially announced earlier this week that she is running for the position of mayor in the 2017 election. She was in her second term as a city council member in July of last year when Mayor Mike McElroy died, and as mayor pro tem, she filled in until the council appointed her mayor to serve until the next election. Although the voters elected her to the city council 2 times, this will be her first campaign for mayor. Moore Wolf has been a friend for many years, and a few days before she made it official, we sat down at the Tribune to chat about everything that has happened during the past year and why she is running for election to remain in the City of Decatur's top position. She told me that she never aspired to run for mayor, but the circumstance of Mayor McElroy's death changed her plans, and she focused on performing the mayor's duties during the rough transition period when she had some, quote, big shoes to fill, end quote. One of the big reasons she wanted to be considered for mayor a year ago was that Lynn McElroy, widow of the late mayor, asked her to run because she knew that's what Tuna would have wanted. She believes she has done a solid job leading the council and being spokesperson for the city during the past year. Obviously, since she is a friend, I'm not altogether impartial in how I feel about the job she has done and is doing during a difficult time in the city's history. She was certainly very supportive of me during the years I served as mayor, and that kind of encouragement is something I won't forget. However, more than being a good friend, Julie has the right motivation to want to continue as mayor and seek election to the post. We've met and talked about the mayor's position several times during the past year, and I've seen her grow in the job and build an enthusiasm for serving and helping to move the community forward. Only a few people in this community ever get the honor of serving as mayor. I can count on my fingers the number of mayors of Decatur during the decades that I've been editor of this newspaper. Julie understands the significance of the job and is honored to lead the city during this time in our history. In my opinion, she has a true sense of the mayor's role in this form of government and how much progress can be made if everyone works together to make things happen. I think anyone who steps into the shoes of a mayor who passed away in office spends several months or longer feeling somewhat apologetic in being mayor, because in this case, Julie knows she wouldn't be in that position if Mayor McElroy was still alive. The first time we sat down and talked about the mayor's responsibilities was just after the death of Mayor McElroy, and she was not only feeling great sadness in his passing, but was aware of the heavy load that was about to be put on her shoulders, one she did not expect. From personal observation and my conversations with her, she has treated the passing of Mayor McElroy with great respect over the past year. What I noticed in our conversation last week was that after a year serving as mayor, she is excited about her own agenda and dreams for the city of Decatur, and that's a good thing. Julie is very enthusiastic about the power of the city working in collaboration with the county, the park district, and several other local boards and public bodies to bring together more clout in seeking grants and operating more efficiently through shared resources. It just makes sense, she told me. Such collaboration benefits all of us in having a stronger voice in saving the taxpayers' money. I believe that's a key area of focus for our community, not only because it makes sense, but if we are going to move forward in this economy, we must work together. The mayor also believes there needs to be a better job done in, quote, communicating to all members of the community, end quote. And she pointed to the recent transparency promoted following the shooting of a black man by a Decatur police officer. Quote, we made sure the communication lines were open and everyone knew what was going on, she said, adding that black leaders like Dr. Janelle Norman played major roles in helping the city deal with what could have been a very explosive situation. Julie believes that working together on those issues that often divide the community is the key to processing difficult situations in the future. I think what impressed me the most in my sit-down with the mayor is her enthusiasm for the future of Decatur because of the potential that is here. Based on her 30 years of living in our city, Julie has laid a foundation of community involvement that serves her well in the mayor's position. From a news anchor at WAND TV, I didn't realize that, WAND TV, to president of the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce, to her work in state government, and her high-profile work at Decatur Memorial Hospital, she has a record of being involved and very aware of what's happening in Decatur. Plus, she's a likable person and has made it a point to attend a ton of functions, events, and meetings during the year she has served as mayor. A year ago, I watched the agony she went through in losing Mayor McElroy, a good friend to both of us. Back then, she did not aspire to be mayor, but felt an obligation to step up and fill a void. Today, she very much aspires to continue as mayor, and her enthusiasm for the future of our city is great to see. She is well-qualified, formidable opponent, and anyone who wants to challenge her in next year's election will have their work cut out for them. Okay, that's the end of it. We got the whole column in, written by editor Paul Osborne of the Tribune. We're going to take a quick break and then return with more news from the Decatur area in just a few seconds. Hang tight. We'll be right back.